Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Brian Cohen. He's the author of the popular Ted Saves the World series and 1,000 writing prompts. He's also co-host of the Sellmore Book Show, an actor, and so much more. Psst, by the way, he also has a YouTube channel, Brian Cohen Showin', and you go there, you'll see him doing some comedy stuff, as well as you can watch his cat named Rocket catch the little red dot. Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? Check us out there. Teaching, learning, leading K-12.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids.
Teaching, learning, leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, learning, leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, welcome back to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Today I'm talking with Brian Cohen. He is an author, podcaster, actor, and a freelance writer. He has written over 30 books, which have sold more than 30,000 copies. These books include 1,000 Creative Writing Prompts and the Ted Saves the World series. He recently published the fifth book in that series, Veil to the Chief. He is a co-host of the Sellmore Book Show with Jim Cookroll and is an extraordinary entrepreneur. Brian is a graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he currently resides with his wife in Chicago. By the way, in 2013, Brian appeared on an episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Cool. Say hi to everyone, Brian.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you for being here. And before we go any further, you have an incredible background, and I've listened to you a lot on the podcast and so forth. And what I'd like to just ask you and get you to talk a little bit about is you got acting going on, stand-up comedian, and appearing on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. And I think everyone should take an acting class. Everyone should take an improv class, certainly. Getting into performance really shaped my writing significantly. I actually, in college, I connected with a woman named Joan Darling, who directed probably one of the funniest episodes of TV of all time, the Chuckles Bites the Dust Mary Tyler Moore episode with the dead clown.
Yes, nice.
That Mary can't stop laughing at.
Yes.
At the funeral. So she directed that episode, and I was fortunate enough to have her as an instructor in school. And one of the first things I was lucky enough to do was I shared some of my writing with her, and she said, I really like this. You should come to my acting class. And so through that class, I actually learned a lot about acting. I did some things overall, just all over the performance space, but I think it's such a smart move for Joan back then to say, this guy's writing is really interesting. It could go somewhere. He should be doing some acting as well. And I think that when you are able to do a little bit of performance, it can really benefit your creativity as well in the writing space and any kind of art. So I think that's definitely has made such a major impact on my life, even though I don't get to act too much anymore. it still informs everything I do.
Excellent. Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Is that what led you to Chicago? Is that into the Windy City area?
Yes, it is. I originally came to Chicago to study improv comedy at such great theaters as Second City, Improv Olympic, The Annoyance, and took classes here, performed here, performed with people who are on just crazy, amazing shows like Veep, and who are on Silicon Valley and the Sonic commercials and all these people that I got to perform with or see perform doing incredible things. And that's originally why I came to Chicago. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. That's so cool. That's neat stuff. We got, so at this point, somebody would ask you, okay, be funny. Never mind. Just kidding.
Right? No, I've gotten that before.
Not going to do
certainly
that.
Certainly.
So, real quick, so how'd you do on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
So a lot of people remember the show way back when with Regis, and there were these kind of even dollar amounts you could make, and the show's changed a lot. They mix around what dollar amounts you can get from different questions, and there's no phone a friend anymore because of the internet, and all sorts of changes to it, but I did walk away with $20,300.
Woo! Awesome, man.
That was nice. It helped pay for me and my wife's wedding. So that was great.
That's excellent. What a nice wedding gift.
I know.
Very cool. Well, let's slide into talking a little bit about things that you do. And so, you know, I started found out about you through I stumbled into Sell More Books show, and without going into commercials about why, it has to do with, you know, me trying to figure out how to write a book. But and so I was following the show, and I love the show, by the way. You guys talk about the self-publishing world, and you give advice to writers and future writers. And before I go there, what I'd really like to do is I pulled something from your website called Build Creative Writing Ideas. In this letter that you have in the opening there, you say, I once was afraid that my words weren't good enough for the page or for other people. Over 150 articles and a consistently selling self-published book later, I know that it's possible for anybody to push past their blocks to form creative writing ideas they love. Your words are inspiring. Can you talk about this?
Well, thank you. And I'm glad you like the show. We were always pushing to try to make it very interesting. I think that so many people don't ever get into writing, or they don't ever get past a certain point in writing because of that fear, because they are feeling pressure from around them not to try to do that, not to do something they're not already an expert in, or something like that. And creativity is scary because you're pulling things from inside of yourself and that have been informed by your past. There's a lot of baggage there. There's a lot of emotion that can come from that. And that can be scary for a lot of people. But I do think, and I've seen this in action, just seeing people who'd never written completing a novel, seeing people who had never had an idea that they deemed worthy completing a play or completing a song. And I really do believe that anybody can do it. And I think that in a lot of the times it's getting the right advice to start you on that path. But then so much of it comes from within, of saying, all right, I'm going to make that leap. I'm going to try, and trying gets you a lot more places than not trying.
which is awesome. I hear you guys often say, make comments like that, where it's just, you know, you got to start.
Yeah.
So at some point, start. I work with public school teachers and building administrators in K-12 schools. And teachers often are looking for methods to get their students to not get stymied by the blank page. What advice would you give them?
I would give them some writing prompts. I think that the blank page is scary. And I go back to one of my favorite movies about writing, Finding Forrester. With Sean Connery. And one of the first things that Sean Connery does when he gives his new protege something to write is he gives him the first paragraph of his own writing and then uses that as a prompt to write the rest of it. I think that the best way to avoid a blank page is to not have a blank page to begin with. So I think when you can start with just kind of something, stream of consciousness, that you get something on that page. If you do have a blank page, go stream of consciousness, say everything in your head, don't let yourself censor out anything that seems stupid because really every writer who has started a book, it did start as something stupid, and you just keep writing. So either some kind of question or prompt that gets people going, or you just don't, you teach yourself not to censor, tell students to don't slow down. I think I've heard the keep your pencil on the page and you're not allowed to take it off, so that you don't even have the chance of skipping a word. And I think that's the kind of thing that can help people with that blank page syndrome.
Awesome. Thank you for that and that advice. That's something that, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things worse. I know that, but it still is bad when you're sitting there going, I can work.
Yeah. It is a pain. And I think that so many people deal with it. And whenever you do feel like, oh, I have writer's block, I can't do it, just think about all the writers who have created amazing things who have also had writer's block, and just know that you're not alone.
Nice. Awesome advice. I love the writing prompt books. You know, by the way, I just think I need to say here to the audience, Brian has not asked me to advertise his books, and I'm not getting anything out of this. There is no, there's no monetary thing happening here because I'm talking about it. But they're awesome tools, and the first one that I want to talk about are those writing prompt books. Incredible. I went through, and I'm using the one to help generate my work, make my brain work a little bit. And I'm just amazed at the different ideas you came up with. Well, what's cool is that you have workbooks for the writing prompts that are designated along different grade levels. Can you talk about them and the idea behind them?
Sure. Well, I definitely wanted to make sure that so many of the prompts that I've created, they could be for adults, and I think a lot of the bigger books, the 1,000 Creative Writing Prompts books I've put together, are more, they look like it's more of something that an adult would use, that a person who wants to become an author, but so many of them were not R-rated in any way, so I said, well, let me take a look at these and see, okay, well, this is a little simpler, maybe we could put this for a lower grade level. And I didn't look at any core curriculum kind of things because, I mean, you know, I have, I'm sure I have the same opinion of those kind of things as many teachers do. But I think that if you can kind of just look at those and say, all right, this is a little simpler, let's go with this for this grade. This is a little more complex, let's go for this grade. But I've always loved, it's an improv quote about performance, but it can definitely be used for teaching as well. And if you treat your audience like scholars, poets, and geniuses, then that's what they will become. Nice. And it totally works for students. If you treat your students like that as well, that is what they can become. And so I wanted to put those prompts out, give them to people in younger age demographics. And so I've put them on platforms like Amazon with CreateSpace that lets you print your paperback books. I've priced them as low as they'll let me. And I've put up about 20 something of them. I always lose count of how many there are because I've basically taken the ones from the 1,000 Creative Writing Prompts books and put them out there. I've also put them on platforms like Teachers Pay Teachers, and I don't make much money off them. Off each book, but I know that they're getting out into a lot of classrooms and into the hands of teachers, and that's really all I care about at that level.
That's excellent. I know that working with kids and teaching them how to overcome it, and I've now looked at your writing prompt books and used them because I get, you know, I sit there and I get into this this mindset trying to work, and sometimes it just doesn't happen, and you have so many different ideas for starting writing. I'm just amazed at the different categories and the different thoughts. I would have been stymied at some point just trying to come up with a different, what do I write next for a writing prompt? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thank you first and foremost. I think that improv and getting to do hundreds and hundreds of scenes in my lifetime, it made me easily come up with more and more not easily always, but it made me come up with lots of potential ideas. And so it's been really great to just send those out into the world, see what people come up with, because that's the most exciting thing. You create one prompt and you give it to 10 students and you will get 10 completely different stories. And that's the greatest part about this, is just seeing what people generate using their own creative minds.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to now let's step forward and let's talk about TED. All right.
Okay.
I love the storyline. And just as a note, I'm someone who over the last couple of years, there's books that I always wanted to read. I'm a reader. I like to read lots of different things. And I have primarily in the past, I was a huge Tom Clancy fan. And I'm former military, and I used to read lots of military type thrillers and things like that. And then I started realizing there's a whole nother world that I totally forgot about. I'm a Star Trek and Star Wars fan. And and I'm like, you know, I've never read any of those books. Of course, I did not realize that when Disney took over everything, they were going to say, oh, all those books don't mean anything. They're another universe. Well, forget it. So
yeah,
I'm so close to getting finished with the alternate universe now. But so I like the Star Trek and Star Wars worlds and all that sort of stuff. I've been getting caught up with those over the days. And I'm a big comic book fan. I started off with Spider-Man's always been my guy. I like that character, especially because he has to deal with real world issues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That was always a cool attraction. And so that's always been the superhero. Between him and Batman, those are the two main characters that I followed. Of course, in competing universes, that's, you know, nothing like spreading yourself thin there. But with that being said, you're writing in a YA universe. So all you adults who are listening out there, don't worry about YA. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Right? So, what I want to talk about is, you know, you've created this great cast of characters. I love the way the story moves. One of the things I love that you do is that you have these neat transitions between chapters that I want to read the next chapter, because you're going to go from something that just happened, and then we're going to go into the next, you know, another segment of the, I started to say film, into another segment of the storyline, and then and then you're going to bring us back into that. And and I love that type of action. I love that type of, kind of thrill. It gets you sucked into the story. I think that's the best way of saying it. And you do that a lot in the way as the story is progressing. You know, and what's really cool, like I said, one of the things I like about Spider-Man is he deals with real world problems. Well, you know, Ted's got those real world problems. He's a high school kid who's got his love of his life, and then he's got another love story going on here, was the reality of love. And then the bad guys come in and and his world changes, and he has friends and he has people who aren't really friends, which I love that also. And it is just whole dealing with the world. And I love the way you've written this. So as we go forward and we talk about Ted, what I'd first like to do is just tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write Ted. Where's Ted coming from?
Sure. Well, the Ted Saves the World series was originally inspired by the works of Joss Whedon, who's famous for Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Serenity and Firefly. And he also did the first two Avengers movies. So he's obviously a big comic book nerd as well. And so this series, I was trying to have unassuming hero name does something spectacular. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Ted Saves the World. So it's almost an exact rip off on that kind of concept. But I wanted to, from that series, you have an incredible magical girl and then a really smart, amazing book nerd with lots and lots of knowledge. And I wanted to combine them into two characters, kind of the girl, but who has many, many years of experience in the world and how it really is. And that is where the character of Erica LaPlante comes from. And she is one of the two leads, although it is very ensemble. She's one of the two leads. And then there's Ted Finley, who is the teenage boy who gets superpowers. And, of course, the wish fulfillment of having a girl of his dreams actually pay attention to him. He doesn't realize it's because she plans on teaming up with him to fight bad guys. But You know, que sera, sera. So you've got these two, Erica and Ted and their friends. They have to fight back against the forces of evil. And in each successive book, we kind of pull back the lens a little bit and see, okay, the world's a little bigger than this. The world's a little bigger than this. And eventually at this point where book five recently came out, we're seeing almost the action is completely split between two whole different worlds. And so it's a series that I wanted to play around with the kind of stories I like to read, which are heroic and epic in scale. I wanted to have witty dialogue like Joss Whedon, so I made all my characters a little witty. And then I wanted to just play around with the superhero concept. And it's funny because I first wrote the Ted Saves the World as a novella in about 2011. And this is before the Marvel stuff really hit big or anything. And so now superheroes seem to be all the rage, but it wasn't even an intention to get into superheroes for sure. But it's been really exciting to see how many different superhero properties there are. I know that I don't know how far in advance we're taping this, but I know this Saturday I have my opening weekend tickets to go see Captain America 3 Civil War with my wife, who I'm kind of dragging to it. And I love what they're doing with that. And it follows the same Joss Whedon format, even though not all of them are directed by Joss Whedon. It's got tragedy. It's got comedy. It smashes them together with action scenes. This is the kind of stuff I like to write.
Awesome. Well, you're hitting it on all cylinders. I got I don't know how you envision the pronunciation of the friend's name, but in my mind, I'm calling him Raj. So how should I be pronouncing his name?
Oh, well, it's Daraj, but you could call him Raj. Okay. You could call him Dollars, whatever you want to call him. He Daraj is a character who is very loosely based off of my best friend, Sumanth. And Sumanth does not have an affinity towards money, but he is he likes to talk about how good he is at things.
Nice.
And so I thought it would be fun to kind of play on that with Ted's Indian best friend, who is obsessed with money, but not in a bad way. He just knows, I want to make money. And having been in the internet marketing space and seen some people, it was just easy to see, okay, well, knowing what I know, this is what Daraj would do. He'd set up a mailing list. He'd try to get tens of thousands of people on it. And so it's been fun to just see how his role has evolved, because he's almost Ted's manager after Ted becomes a public superhero. And that's something you don't really see that often. You see a best friend who's like, oh, that's cool, but a best friend who's kind of trying to get in on the business side of a hero is something you don't see that often. So I thought that would be a fun angle to take.
And I love that part of it. And when you were talking about adding the comedy part to it, that's the first image that comes to mind, because here, just like you're saying, I mean, here we have Ted learning about his superpowers, and he's growing in them, and he's dealing with some pretty bad things that are happening. And, as his world, the world is uncovering what's going on. And meanwhile, you've got a manager who's talking to him about public appearances and, you know, like you said, email lists. I find myself smiling or laughing or looking forward to his next interaction in there, wondering what he's going to do. And yeah. Which is a cool character. And so that's really like that, especially when you kind of have the government wanting to use Ted, and we've got this kind of hiatus that happens, and I just kind of wonder, Daraj is kind of left onto his own devices to figure out how to market Ted. So, you know, it's like, nice, you know, having been a Spider-Man fan, he could have always used a Daraj as a, as a friend. He never had that marketer helping him with
that. Yeah, he needed some marketing behind him for sure.
Sure did. I love it. I'm currently in the middle of your third book called Portal Combat. And I love it. And you've gotten to five with the series, and this is all through self-publishing, and you've created this world. And I was just wondering if you could talk just a little bit about the self-publishing world, and maybe in thinking towards the idea of teachers working with students on maybe even trying to reach out there and follow in your footsteps.
And I've actually heard of some teachers either putting together anthologies and self-publishing them or making that part of kind of a class project. And I think that really is the extension of what I know I used to do as a kid in English classes, which is you put together a newspaper and you get all the articles for it and you start things like that. Well, now it's really easy to not, you know, just paste everything in giant sheets of paper.
Yes.
You could actually go and you could self-publish. You could create something. And I think it's just so awesome that you can now do that, and I think teachers should definitely take advantage of it, because what self-publishing is, it's not a vanity project. It's not a I couldn't make it through traditional publishing, I couldn't get Penguin to publish my book, so I'm going to go with self-publishing. It's actually this really interesting new world that has opened up over the last few years, where there are people, many of whom were traditionally published and were with people like Penguin or Tor or Random House, and they said, you know what, this is not working for me. The publishing houses have some backwards concepts here. They may have a lot of money behind them, but they are not helping me the way I want to be helped as an author. And so many of these authors have moved over to being primarily self-published. And self is one of those misnomers, because many indie publishers will get a cover designer and an editor and all of these other people to help them. So it's really team publishing. But they go out there, and when they put it out, they actually retain kind of more of the rights to what they can do. They can go put it out on audio on their own. They can create a paperback on their own. And when a publishing company gives an advance, it's very rare that people will ever make money after that, because it's been said, allegedly, publishing companies tend to fudge the numbers a bit so that authors never get any additional money unless they've sold millions and millions of copies. And most authors don't sell millions and millions of copies. But indie authors, they don't get an advance, but they get a higher percentage of royalties from the beginning. And as a result, there are thousands of authors who are now making their day wages off of being a author, which is such a new world. It's such an amazing thing. And I think it's something teachers should encourage students to consider, because there's still some way back trends that people are saying are the way things are. People say ebooks will never last, that sort of thing.
Right.
Well, times are changing. And I think that it would be smart for teachers to try a self-publishing project with their students and play around with it. And who knows, maybe one of your students doesn't waste 10 years sending out query letters to agents. They start writing the books that are going to be really popular and successful.
Excellent. I appreciate you talking about that. And that actually, it lends itself to a nice little lead in to, you have this podcast that you and Jim Cookrell do called Sell More Books Show, where you give advice about that. How'd that come about? Who had was it an idea that one of you came up with and sought the other one out, or
it was really great. Jim and I didn't know each other that well when we started, and I think we just connected on Facebook briefly. I was having some marketing thing, and Jim said, hey, can I be a part of it? And I said, no. And that's how we met. And so
nice.
I was already kind of in the weeds with it, so I didn't want to add any new things and create new art. But Jim and I were friends on Facebook. So when Jim said, hey, I want to do a podcast, and can you think of anybody who'd be interested? I was the first to respond because I had been thinking about doing a podcast. And so we had a meeting and we tried to think, okay, well, what's not being done? Because there's a lot of self-publishing podcasts and many of them are interview-based shows. So we said, all right, well, how can we mix things up? And so we determined, all right, well, what if we find the five latest stories and the three latest tips that authors can use to learn more about writing, about marketing, about publishing? And so that's how it began. We just filmed right before this episode. We filmed episode 109. So we've been doing it for over 2 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And it's been great, and we have a lot of really dedicated fans like yourself, obviously.
Yes.
People who are commenting on posts, people who email us news tips, people who like us, and we really appreciate all that support. And it's been so helpful for me as an author that I get to be so close to this, where I get to learn these things first. I get to see what's happening so that I know, okay, well, I know that this thing I do is going to be different, is going to be something I need to work on. And we started around the time that I published the first TED book, and I've learned all the mistakes I made through the process since then. And I've learned a lot of things new to do, and it's been a really great way to connect with people, but also to spread the good word of what is possible out there for authors.
That's what I love. And you guys have this, you have a great interaction because you don't always agree with each other, which is also nice.
Yeah.
And I love the news section. I love it when you're talking through the news. And you know, I've learned quite a bit and listened to the different ideas that you guys have. But what I really like is that, you know, you get into these discussions about what is happening in the news, and it gives you an idea to think about as, you know, you hear what's going on, as opposed to just the shows that are interview based or solo shows where someone's talking about their experiences self-publishing. So good stuff. I do have to tell you that you guys snagged me with that April Fool's joke, because I'm like, as I'm listening, I'm like, wait a second, there is no way. And I'm trying to remember what part of it was like, no, this is not real. And it was the something about Jim becoming part of something. And I was like, this isn't happening here.
Yeah, we had a wild April Fool's show where we just did a short extra little episode where we made up the news for that week. And Jim came up with the idea and I modified it to make sure just it wasn't mean or anything. And it was so fun. And we said that Jim had become the CEO, the new CEO of Google Books.
And that was it.
That has not happened. That is not the truth. But that doesn't mean we didn't get several emails and comments congratulating Jim. And this was after stories where we had all sorts of wild and crazy stuff. And it was just so funny that people could make it that far and not know that we were joking. It just shows that, you know, when you have that trust build up, that you should abuse it. No.
Yes, Orson Welles will be proud of you. Would be proud of you. Yes.
Yes, it was very Orson Welles.
Very much so. You know, and it was. And I forget which part of it, but something at the beginning where you were talking about something in the news where just recently you'd had a show where you guys were talking about how, you know, if this happened, if that happened. And I was thinking, all right, this that's where my skepticism was starting to hang in. And I'm like, no. But you guys did a great job of playing it off, because it was like, there's no laughing. There was no.
I know. That was so hard to spin craziness and not laugh. But we pulled that off. Okay. Thank you.
Definitely did. Well, what I'd like to do is I have two questions that I like to ask all of my guests, and then we'll finish up with a couple last things, Brian. So if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, do you have some advice you'd give them?
I definitely do. I think that any new teacher should try to make sure that, yes, obviously you need to do all the curriculum that is required of you, but if you can find even small ways to encourage some creativity, to give people a chance to color outside the lines, to not give the rote, memorized responses, to take something like a creative writing prompt or a picture or something and just let their minds go and play around with what's possible with what they can write as a possibility for that prompt or image or anything. And I think that the more you give kids a chance to stretch themselves in that way, I think the more you'll be surprised, whereas someone who maybe seemed like they were a problem student, maybe they just have a little bit more on the creativity side as compared to the just regular memorized fill in the blank side.
Nice. Thank you. Excellent advice. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If you had a chance to say thank you, you would. What would you say?
Well, I actually have several teachers who I've given names to in my Ted Saves the World series. Some of my villains and
oh, nice.
Other characters I've named several. And I think that one teacher who sticks out to me is definitely Patrick Redican. You might recognize that name from being
yes, I do.
From book 2 and 3.
Yes.
But he was a great teacher who taught me English and speech and debate as well. And he was very open to letting you try things. And he seemed to always be willing to try things to see what kind of havoc his kids could get into. And one of the things I remember is senior year, we had the option of not just doing a paper, but we had kind of an open-ended assignment. And me and several friends, we filmed aspects of, Lord of the Flies in one of our friends' backyards.
Okay.
And we were able to do that as a scene, as a test. And then a later teacher, Greg Cable. Cable is also another name you'll find familiar from the Ted Saves the World series. And making them villains was a show of respect, by the way. But he also gave us an open assignment for a final instead of doing a paper, and that turned into a play that I wrote that I had performed multiple times. And so when you give that kind of open assignment, when you give the ability to just use those creative facilities, not everyone will take you up on it, but when those do, I mean, the fact that I was able to write a play that we then did readings for that I then had performed in North Carolina and in Chicago, that all happened from a final, from a paper.
Wow.
And so I think that just goes to show when you are willing to keep things open, you can inspire people. So definitely big props to Redican and Cable for those two, for sure.
That is so awesome also to know that they did good stuff before they went to the evil side. So
I know. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing the stories. That's awesome. Well, Brian, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. Before we go, if someone wanted to connect with you further, where would you send them?
Well, I think teachers could get a lot out of going to buildcreativewritingideas.com. I have a lot of free resources that teachers can either download or they can check out on the website, or, you know, buy. They can purchase a lot of workbooks and they can learn a lot more about creative writing. If there's an author in the mix, you could go to sellmorebookshow.com to learn more about that podcast that has entranced Steve for so long. And if you like the sound of the TED books, you can go to briancohen.com.
Now, before I I really let you go. I also got to make sure that I say this. And by the way, I'll include links to your different websites and your social media presence and all that as well as to the podcast. So just look at the show notes, everybody. I'll have those links there for you. And one of the things I also want to make sure I do here is that, you know, you got a chance. Now, once again, everybody out there, Brian has not asked me to do this, but as a former principal, former school administrator, working with kids, former teacher, the TED Save the World, series is awesome, and you know, kids would love to read it. Here you got your chance. I know there's somebody out there. I've heard you say that you'd love to get your books into school. So, what would you say if you know they're listening right now?
I would say that the TED Saves the World series, and I know this from experience talking to some parents, is something that can get people who maybe aren't even that into reading to read, because it's very cinematic. It's kind of like a TV show, but it isn't vapid. It still has friends working together to try to overcome the baddies, and it's got a lot of fun, but I think there are some lessons learned along the way. And I will say that for a classroom in South Africa, I did once write a TED Saves the World quiz to give to that classroom because everyone in the class had read the book. And I would be happy to send that quiz to any other instructors if they decided to give out TED Saves the World, which on ebook version is free to start the series. And I've just reformatted all the books to make them much shorter so that they are cheaper for everybody to buy.
Excellent. So I encourage all of you to take a look at that and introduce TED to your kids. It's good stuff there. And then take Brian up on the quiz. That would be cool. Well, Brian, like I said before, it's been fun. I greatly appreciate you spending time with me today. I'm looking forward to keeping up with you, TED, and learning from you and Jim on your podcast. And I wish you the best.
Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, Brian. Take care now. Hey, did you know that we're now available on Google Play Music? That's right. You can now find Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 on Google Play Music. Check us out.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.